Blog Talk Radio.
Anybody can stop loaded Kentucky from having an undefeated season. We welcome you in. Just got Revis back, Revis Island, Crow's back. We've talked so much on this radio program over the years about the importance of that Jets secondary under the Rex Ryan era and how that was never the offending party, quote unquote. And early on, Todd Bowles has realized don't keep away the, don't keep what was bad, make what was bad good. He did that by bringing back Revis and Crow and getting Gokrist and Screen, and we'll have a lot of fun with those guys next year. As you look at this situation going forward for the Jets, who are clearly now in the market for a running back and a quarterback, and we'll see what winds up happening, whether it's Ryan Fitzpatrick or whether it's Marcus Mariota or somebody else in the draft. We shall see how everything shakes out, but clearly there is going to be some interesting wheeling and dealing related to the draft, especially when Chip Kelly brings in Tim Tebow for a workout. Even if it pans out to nothing, anything related to Tim Tebow gets people vice open, and anything related to Chip Kelly and his crazy moves over the last week gets people's attention. So it's been an interesting week when it comes to anything related to the Philadelphia Eagles, and I just love how People Magazine reporter broke that story. That would have been it, or would be if he signs, just perfect, because in many ways Tim Tebow's life has been a story fit for both People Magazine and Sports Networks. We are going to be joined by Ryan Ballinger momentarily, and we got a lot to talk about with Ryan. We got Jordan Spieth's theatrics. We got Patrick Reed's off the course issues. We've got the run up to Augusta. We've got Tiger. We've got a host of stuff we're going to talk about. So we hope that you come on back in 30 seconds, and we're going to talk to Ryan Ballinger to get our golf chat going. It's been a while, and the Ryder Cup. It's been a while since we've had Ryan on. It's going to be good to talk to him and get into all this stuff happening in the world of golf, and we will get him on the air and get that conversation going right after this, back in 30 seconds, just teeing it up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio and the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Back on teeing it up with Jeremy Schilling. We'll be joined by Ryan Ballinger momentarily to talk about everything that's happening in the world of golf. We are 3 weeks away from that walk down Magnolia Lane, the start of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Always sparks 3 weeks to Augusta. And here we are now with Jim Nantz and his friends taking us from March Madness, where I think Kentucky will face. I haven't decided who they're facing yet. figure that out eventually. By the time we get here, I can see Duke being, just been inconsistent. That's my problem with Duke. I'll have to find somebody else. Maybe it's Virginia. Maybe we have a Kentucky-Virginia final coming. That would be interesting. We'll continue with bracketology and see how the NCAA tournament plays itself out. But obviously, everybody wants to get to Augusta, and then once we get to Augusta, we start trying to figure out what the heck will happen come the back nine on Sunday. Ryan Ballingy wrote an interesting piece on his website, Golf News Net. Let me get you the exact thegolfnewsnet.com about the trademarks that Tiger Woods owns. You may have heard a story about how Nike owns Tiger's name and he couldn't name his new restaurant. It's the Tiger Woods Jupiter Sports and Dining Club, but it's the Woods Jupiter Sports and Dining Club. That's not true, says his agent Mark Steinberg. If you're interested in what things Tiger, what trademarks he does hold, Google that story from Ryan Ballingy. It's a really interesting article and a really interesting perspective about kind of where Tiger is in terms of his thinking, business I'm acumen, him and Mark Steinberg and the folks going back to what they've trademarked over the years. It's an interesting read, so I highly recommend that one for all of you out there. Bubba Watson is going to do something really cool. He is going to promote the Drive Chip and Putt Championship, which is coming back to Golf Channel 3 weeks from yesterday. So in 20 days, you'll be seeing the Drive Chip and Putt Championship return, second annual return to Golf Channel live from Augusta National at 9 a.m. Eastern on Golf Channel, preceded by 1 hour at 8 a.m. Eastern time by live from the Drive Chip and Putt Championship on Golf Channel. And he will be promoting it along with Lucy Lee, who became the star of the Drive Chip and Putt and then qualified for the U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst. They'll be on a media tour promoting it and going into New York City next week, which is a really cool deal and a really good job by Bubba to kind of assert himself and kind of become the face. You may remember that he picked up a lot of fans walking down that practice tee last year during the event, giving high fives, and then Jordan Spieth did the same thing, and Adam Scott eventually, they went and got his green jacket, and he took pictures with the winners eventually at the trophy presentation along with Billy Payne, chairman of the Augusta National Golf Club. And I always thought that that was a really nice and good deal on Bubba's part, who gets a weird rap in the media, and I think he's misunderstood by a lot of the media, especially last year when he does stuff like basically counts him out of the U.S. Open and the Open Championship by basically discounting himself before the event even begins, which is some weird mental game that you must play with yourself when you basically say this golf course, meaning Pinehurst and where the Open Championship is played, doesn't fit me, doesn't fit my eye. And you'd think a course like Pinehurst that was, had all of its rough eliminated and was set up for a bomber to just hit it in there, and you can hit it in the native areas, and most lies were pretty decent. Martin Keimer found that out on Saturday. And he kind of psyched himself out mentally. And he just, for as talented as Bubba is, a course either fits his eye and it works or it doesn't. It's like this really haphazard, hot, cold way that Bubba goes about being Bubba. And for somebody who's oh so talented and who has won, won two green jackets and won at Riviera and has done all the things that Bubba has done in terms of winning quality golf tournaments on quality golf courses, it's very odd and very peculiar when Bubba does not rise up to that. And that just continues to mystify me. as we look at Bubba's future, and obviously he's going to be one of the favorites for Augusta. He's won two out of the last 3 years and hit shots last year, especially on Sunday, that boggled all of our minds, especially the tee shot on 13 where he went driver wedge. That's just not what we're used to seeing out of Bubba. And as we wait for Ryan Ballingy to come on teeing it up, 917-889-2301, 917-889-2301, press 1 when prompted. I think the point continues to hold that there is nobody more gifted when it comes to visualizing and seeing a golf course post-Tiger than Bubba Watson. There is nobody that plays with more raw emotion post-Tiger than Bubba Watson. We've seen it go the wrong, since Tiger than Bubba Watson. We've seen guys like Pat Perez and Patrick Reed in the way that Patrick uses everything and gets mad about everything and uses this kind of football player mentality. But there's nobody that gets that childish-like excitement for the mundane tasks of hitting a fairway, which, if you think about it, is a fairly mundane deal, trying to hit a fairway. And it's just really weird. And it's the talent that he has, and the way and the gifts he's been given in terms of being able to play competitive golf at such a high level and be as good at competitive golf at such a high level. When he does his thing and kind of gets off the rails, it just boggles the mind. Not off the rails in a serious sense, but when he does not pour heart and soul into an event like he has and like he does, and come forward with the talent that he can possess, it really boggles the mind. We sit here on 6:12 p.m. Eastern Time waiting for Ryan Ballingy to call in. Here on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on this Monday, March 16th, in addition to people filling out one of these, which is their brackets. We also have the selection show coming up at the next top of the hour at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific, for the women and the Quinnipiac Bobcats women's basketball team. If you were with us last week, you heard us, myself and our friend and colleague Seth Rothman, go through that game for you and how they really pulled away in the second half of Marist. And obviously, QU now waits for their seed coming up at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And we welcome to Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling from from Golf News Net, Golf News Net Radio, and a contributor to Devil Ball Golf on Yahoo. He is Ryan Ballingy. Hello, Ryan.
Jeremy, thanks for having me on, and sorry for being a little off on the time.
No problem. It happened to the best of us. Jordan Spieth, we've sat here for the last 2 years, Ryan, and said, oh, so talented, has no fear, oh, so young, and eventually he's going to break through. And the display he put on down the stretch yesterday with all those up and downs and rebounding like he did and being three down with six to go and still recovering, it was a heck of a show.
Yeah, it was. It was, I think, the best tournament of the year, at least in terms of drama. And like you said, the way he found a way to get into the playoff without his best stuff on the final three holes, really. He didn't even have his best stuff all day. He just played well enough to kind of hang around par, make a couple of birdies on the back nine, and escape with some huge pars. And he did in the playoff, too, to keep things going. And then found just enough to make the 28-foot birdie putt to win the whole thing. And I think for any player, the seminal moment in their young development as a professional is when they learn to win without their best stuff. Rory did it at the PGA last summer on a bigger stage than this, but it was an important win for him. And I think this is an important win for Spieth because it tells him he doesn't have to play perfect golf to win. And he was convinced of that no later than December of last year when he won the Australian Open, that he needed to play almost perfect golf to compete with the best in the world. And I think he proved to himself yesterday he doesn't need to do that. He just needs to play good enough golf, A golf for most of the time, but not perfect golf, and he can still win golf tournaments.
And he beat Patrick Reed and Sean O'Hare in the Valspar playoff. And I was saying before you came on, Ryan, that Patrick Reed may be as close to a football player's mentality as the PGA Tour has right now. The emotion, the focus, the rawness that he possesses when he gets in contention, you've seen it obviously in a positive way with his four wins, in a negative way when he hits those loose shots on Monday at Honda. He really he comes at it like a football player wanting to compete, and I think that's what made that playoff so fascinating, because Jordan said afterwards he was mad that Patrick was still in the playoff, and he knew that he could not give Patrick any more opportunities.
Yeah, and I really like that. I don't like Patrick Reed personally. I will make that very abundantly clear. However, I have to respect and admire his tenacity when presented an opportunity to win a golf tournament or get a shot to win a golf tournament. And he knew what was on the line with that 30-footer on 18 on the 72nd hole. He knew it was there. And he made that putt like a guy who knew it was in all the way. And I have to respect that tremendously. That's what makes him a great match player. It's what got him that up and down on 18. He knew there had to be a way, and he figured it out. And the only reason he lost is because the better man that day made a putt that you can't play defense in golf in that situation. So I really liked what I saw for Patrick Reed as a competitor on Sunday. I think that is a good makeup for him for what happened on Monday at the Honda, where he got himself into contention, was tied for the lead standing on 15 tee, and splashed one in the drink in the bear trap. So I think for him, this is a good little piece of redemption. I know it's not the fifth PGA Tour win that he wanted, but it's darn close, and I think that's a good thing for him moving forward.
Yeah, talking with Ryan Ballinger here about golf, you touched on it. Patrick Reed has a lot of haters out there. For those that don't know, he is ensnarled in a he said debate right now involving a new book from Shane Ryan that's coming out in May that talks about cheating and stealing accusations from his college days. To me, the main aspect of this, and I've had a lot of people talk to me about this on Twitter, who have basically said, so what? It already happened. You know, what's the big deal? And for me, Patrick is a problem here from a personal standpoint because of potential sponsors. But B, there's a public reputation. B, this is a distraction in terms of him trying to win majors. But C, golf has this beautiful vehicle called the first tee, where if you have messed up in your past in terms of honesty and integrity, there is a vehicle to redeem yourself and a vehicle to mentor kids and instill golf's values. And instead, he's playing a legal semantics game right now with sworn statements that are not sworn statements, et cetera, et cetera. What is Patrick Reed thinking here with these responses to these allegations?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. And I saw he spoke with Sky Sports on, I believe it was Saturday afternoon, about the kind of response that's been reported by Stephanie Way predominantly to the accounts given by an anonymous Augusta State player and to the account given by an assistant coach, former assistant coach, I should say, at Georgia under Chris Hack, with acknowledgments that essentially what has been reported by Shane Ryan is at least what kind of the gospel among these folks, the players and assistant coaches on these two teams, Georgia and Augusta State. And Reed responded basically by trying to throw those players under the bus and still keeping with this, I've got these statements from my coaches story. And I don't think that's going to hold up in scrutiny over time if he wants to continue to press this issue. I'm going to go on a little bit of a soapbox here, but I found it very disturbing that it took Golf Channel approximately 3 days to acknowledge that someone else had done some reporting against their lack of reporting and just basically letting Patrick Reed go on air and say whatever the heck he wanted without probably looking at what Chris Hack or Josh Gregory, the former coaches, provided in terms of written statements, that they weren't affidavits, that they were signed statements, they're not legally binding, or at least truly legally binding, and the content of those, what he had, kind of his evidence. They finally acknowledged it, and they did in the poorest way possible. However, I think if this continues to come back and Reed continues to bring this up, and it's his fault at this point that he keeps bringing it up, it's going to make him look bad. So I think it is better for him to continue to play well and just have your second place and top three finishes and don't speak about the other things that have been put out about you, because there are plenty of people in this world, and particularly in the Augusta State program, because many of them are not professionals, at least in the PGA Tour, who will happily at one point come out and put a name on the accusations that are all anonymous in nature at this point. So I think it is in his best interest professionally to kind of let this one drop and then let the book come out, and then he can try this again, but I don't think it'll work out in his favor.
And Stephanie deserves some huge credit here for the reporting which she's done, and I agree with you that Golf Channel silence was interesting, and what I'm still not clear about was when Todd Lewis did the chat with Patrick, was that for something from Live from the Masters? Because Steve Sands sat down with Rory at Doral also for Live from the Masters. And did they put that out because that was newsworthy? Or was this a case where Patrick asked to speak to Golf Channel so that he could have a platform? That was not made clear. And I think we need some clarification there, because if it's the latter, if it's Patrick trying to use Golf Channel as a method to get this update out, it further speaks to this PR offensive that Patrick's trying to make, which is just not working.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jeremy, because I had not been aware that there was a Rory piece of sand that was for Masters coverage, so that very well could have all fallen under that umbrella. They're going to talk to certain guys they think are going to do well at the Masters and get that lined up ahead of time. And I would think in that instance, then your inclination is right. He said something either that was newsworthy as part of that interview and they wanted to get it out now, or he simply said, hey, while we're here, I want to talk about this subject matter. Here's what I want to say. And Golf Channel just kind of ran with it. In either case, I think the delivery was not appropriate given the gravity that I feel of the accusations, because ultimately Shane Ryan and his anonymous sources are accusing Patrick Ryan of Vijay Singh or Colin Montgomery-level cheating, and those guys turn out to be big superstars, and those things follow them around for 25 years. They still follow them around, the incidents in Jakarta and when Vijay Singh was playing on the Asian Tour. So this can linger if he doesn't get out in front of this and just simply acknowledge things. Those guys never did, and they still exist today. So I think he needs to learn something from them. And I think Golf Channel needs to learn that the microphone that they have, the bullhorn that they have to be able to broadcast to the world of golf, especially with Fact 9 Network out of the way and all that stuff, they need to take more care and responsibility of the authority that they have, because otherwise it kind of gives them a black eye. And this isn't the first time this year they've done this, where they've misreported a story and then not come back with an apology. It happened on the Robert Allenby front as well. Rex Iger spent a week in Hawaii trying to track down Robert Allenby's night after missing the cut at the Sony Open, and misreported some very key elements, including that Allenby went to a strip club that night, that became kind of gospel, and all of a sudden that story disappeared from the internet without a retraction or apology to Robert Allenby. And I think that there are a couple of incidents here, if they kind of combine together, it hurts Golf Channel's credibility, if you think about it.
Yeah. Talking with Ryan Ballinger here on About the World of Golf. The two of us haven't spoken since the Ryder Cup announcement happened, and obviously there's 10,000 layers to this, which we can't get into because there's not enough time, because this could be a three-hour show solely on the Ryder Cup. My quick take on this is, if this is going to start the so-called European model, then Davis is a good captain to have and kind of spark this sequence of events. But as so many have said, this comes down to who makes the most birdies, especially on Sunday. In summation, do you believe these changes will help the U.S. make more birdies on Sunday?
You know, ultimately, I don't think that it will. I mean, there's nothing that you can say in terms of preparation or semantics that ultimately decides the match. Golf shots decide the match, ultimately. However, I do think that having Love in charge in 2012 gave these guys at least a distinct 1 to 2 point advantage in the way that he figured out the teams and kind of worked with their mojo to get them in the right places. Were it not for Ian Poulter coming back from, what was it, like 4 or 5 down in the last match on Saturday, where Rory McIlroy was literally just watching. He was a spectator. And were it not for that comeback and an invocation of Seve, otherworldly invocation from Jose Mario Lothable, David Lovell looks like a guy who's going to win. He probably does win. He probably has a good chance to get the 14 jobs, so Tom Watson never gets the gig. Tom Watson doesn't fail, so we don't have this. So maybe things would have just stayed the same. So I don't think you need to go through the whole process of the task force for all of this to happen. I think these are common sense changes, ultimately, that should have been made a long time ago because the Europeans have proven that they work. So I think that you're right. I think, and initially I did not like the idea of Davis getting this job again. But given the context of his interest level, of what the changes were, the pressure that this captain, the first one out of this task force, will be under to win, I think Davis is the right guy for the job, and I think the changes make common sense. And then it comes down to, can you make birdies? And the U.S. has set themselves up, at least logistically, to be as comfortable as possible to win this thing. Hopefully that means the players do feel comfortable and they perform when it matters.
Yeah. Bigger surprise to you so far this PGA Tour season? Tiger's had all these issues, or Phil hard work has not paid off yet?
That's a good question. Both are equally surprising, but I think it's Tiger just because of how bad. I mean, I thought it was going to be kind of ugly, but not that ugly. Didn't think 82, yeah. Didn't think pull out after 11 holes. I thought Phil would have been markedly improved, and he showed signs of it, but he leaked oil on Sunday/Monday at the Honda. But at least there's some indication there that things may have improved a little bit, and maybe he's starting to figure things out, and maybe that'll allow him to peak for the Masters. We'll see what he does, particularly in San Antonio, see whether he feels ready for year's first major. But we literally don't know where Tiger is, what he's doing, whether he's going to play in the Masters, whether he might play San Antonio or Houston. Does he have a tune-up in him? If he does show up to Augusta National, should we expect him to break 80? I mean, I think the lack of information that we have about Tiger, given the poor performances we've seen in what amounts to 2 and a little over half rounds so far this year, that's a bigger shock to me, and just because of the vagueness of it all.
Your favorite winner of 2015 so far?
Oh, it's Patrick Harrington. It's got to be Patrick Harrington. I just have a soft spot for Harrington and what he accomplished in 2007, 2008. And I really wonder if he thinks sometimes at night, if someone told him what was going to happen to Tiger in 2009, 10, and 11, if someone had told him what was going to happen, what he made those changes to a swing, or what he kept going, and what, if he had kept going, would he have won 2, 3, 4 more majors? Could he have been a Faldo-level player in terms of the eyes of history if he had just not done anything to his swing? Or because he probably thought Tiger's going to come back, he's going to be great, I need to be better than him to keep this up, and he made all those changes and ruined his game for what amounts to 7 years. So I think for him to finally get through all of that, at least for one afternoon, and win, that meant a lot to me. I thought it was the best win of the year.
I am looking at your Twitter feed here. It sounds like you had an experience on the 18th hole of your round today that almost hurt some people.
Yeah, and it really was no fault of my own. So our golf club, our final hole is a 440-yard par 4, all uphill, about 35 feet uphill. So it's a tough finisher. And to the right side, actually to the left too, but more to the right side, there's a pond. And these folks hold onto our club. I don't even think they have permission. But they walk down to the pond, just it's just a little underneath the tee, but not really. And so we're hitting an uphill tee shot, and they're just standing there taking photos, like a GQ photo shoot, and it wasn't even your traditional engagement photo shoot. And I kind of looked at them for like a half minute, and I was like, so are you guys going to, you know, move? And they just kept on shooting. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to wait here forever, and ripped one, and it probably went 3 or 4 feet above their head, and then went into the fairway. So they seemed completely oblivious to what was happening. They could have been staring death in the face, but I wasn't going to wait forever, so I had to hit.
Oh, man, that's great. As we look at Augusta, and this leads into my last question, one of the great things about Augusta is when we wake up Sunday morning and we know the hole locations and we know what's out there and we know that, yeah, you can shoot a 31 or a 32 on the second nine if you can go low enough, and you look at that leaderboard and you kind of envision this guy's not going to stay there, this guy could stay there, watch this guy three shots back. That, to me, is the beauty of Augusta. And no matter who's participating, that is still beautiful. Do you think on Sunday morning, April 12th, when Golf Channel comes on the air from Live from the Masters, they are talking about Tiger Woods?
No, unless it's a casualty of missing the cut, which they could shoehorn in there. But I think he will not be a factor at the Masters, whether he plays or he doesn't. I keep referencing in podcasts and other stuff I've written about 2010 when he had no life. He just kind of life was in shambles. Had found a way to get enough game together to finish tied fourth. Now the opposite's kind of true. I don't think he could be happier in his personal life. He seems like he's very happy to be a dad. He's with Lindsey Vonn. He's very happy in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And he has no game to speak of. He has no short game to speak of, which is the most dangerous part of this for Tiger. He needs some semblance of a short game to get around Augusta National. It's what saved him so many times, not only there, but in other major championships. If he doesn't have that, then he has to be absolutely perfect from tee to green to have any chance of making the cut, much less contending. So unless he's pulling that out in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I just can't imagine a situation where even if he plays, he's a part of the conversation on Sunday.
And the one thing that concerns me is if you go back to the Phoenix round and go back to the 12 holes, he was 2 over because he was putting amazingly. He made everything he looked at. And Tiger has a tendency when he has to focus on another part of the game that his putter lags. And if his tee to green game is better and his short game is better, the deciding factor will still be that putter. And since 05, he has not putted well at Augusta consistently at all. And for him to contend, he needs that putter to be hot. And yet his tendency is for his putter to slack off when he's had to focus on something else. That's my biggest concern with Tiger. I think the rest of the game will be better, but is the putter still hot like it was in Torrey to where he can recover and contend? It'll be fascinating to watch if he does head down Magnolia Lane.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the putter, the one part of the game I haven't really been very disappointed in has been the putting. It's been pretty okay. It hasn't been brilliant, but it's kept him respectable in what I've seen. So if that's there, then that's a good thing because that had left him for really the last 3, 4, 5 years. But as you say, he hasn't been that great at Augusta National putting-wise since 05. So if he can find that and avoid three putts and get up and down, then he can maybe sneak on a par 5 and 2 here and there. You drop a shot here and there, 1, 2, 3 under. You shoot a couple of rounds in the 70, 69 range, and all of a sudden you're in this thing. But that is a long way from 82 at TPC Scottsdale. And it is a long way because it's a lot of shots, but it's also not a long way. And I think if you're kind of a high-level player, you're a professional player, you know you can go from 65 to 75 very easily, and they just kind of add up here and there. So they can come off here and there. So if Tiger can chip and putt, and that's a huge if, obviously, but if he can do that, then he has a chance to linger around par. Maybe he can kind of sneak in a couple of birdies and maybe be on the fringe of contention. But I just can't see him getting well enough, quickly enough to be able to be a legitimate contender.
Ryan Ballingy, Golf News Net, and a contributor to Yahoo's Devil Ball Golf. Thank you as always, and we will talk to you come Augusta week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me, Jeremy. See ya.
See ya. That is it for Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. We will talk to you next week and enjoy the NCAA tournament on CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV. Have a great night, everybody.